WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave in for Terry Gross. On today's Archive Edition, we remember record producer Sam Phillips, who died Wednesday of respiratory failure at the age of 80. The founder of Sun Studios, he helped launch the careers of such musicians as Johnny Cash, Carl Perkins, Roy Orbison, Jerry Lee Lewis, Charlie Rich, and, of course, Elvis Presley. A little later, we'll hear from Johnny Cash and Carl Perkins about what it was like to work with Phillips. But first, rock historian Peter Guralnick. His two-part biography, Last Train to Memphis, is widely considered to be the definitive history of Elvis, from his early years to superstardom. When Terry spoke with Peter Guralnick in 1994, they started with the story of Elvis's first recording. At the age of 18, he went to the fledgling Sun Studio in Memphis to take advantage of their service that lets you make your own record for $3.98 plus tax.
Evening shadows make me blue. When each weary day is through, how I long to be with you, my happiness. Every day I reminisce, dreaming of your tender kiss, always thinking how I miss my happiness. Years it seems have gone by since we shared our dreams, but I hold you again. There'll be no blue memories then.
Elvis recorded this hoping that it would give him an in at Sun Records. He wanted this to be his audition. So what did Sam Phillips, the founder of Sun Records, have to say when he heard what Elvis had done?
Pretty much nothing. Not at that time. I mean, I think on Elvis's part, it was an unrealistic hope. And what he got out of it, ultimately, was he got a two-sided acetate. The other side was, that's when my heartaches begin. And he went home with it, and he played it himself. His parents played it. I'm sure everyone marveled at it. He played it for his friends, and he stored it away eventually. What this probably led to was a revamping of his thinking, and all through the fall of 53, he continued, at least as Marion Kiesker remembers it, and Marion Kiesker was Sam Phillips' assistant, the office manager at Sun Records. And Marion recalls him coming in over the fall, and Sam also has memories of Elvis over the succeeding months. He came back in again in January of 54, made another acetate, and again nothing happened. And it wasn't until the spring of 54, I think until May of 54, that he finally got a call from Sam Phillips. And this came about as a result of both Marion Kiesker and Sam Phillips noting about Elvis that he was a good ballad singer and that maybe someday, and I'm sure this was also promoted by Elvis's return visits to the studio just to check in, see what was going on, but each of them had noted that Elvis was a good ballad singer, and eventually he got a ballad called Without You, which he had picked up at the Tennessee State Prison over in Nashville. He didn't have a singer for it, and he called Elvis back in.
And so Elvis comes in because Phillips thinks that he has the right voice to record this ballad, and then Phillips doesn't like the way Elvis sings it.
That's right. And again, the interesting thing in terms of this whole issue of cultural theft is that the ballad that he recorded does not resemble in the least anything to do with black music, the African-American tradition. It may very well be a black singer who is singing it, but it could as easily be Dennis Day as the Ink Spots. And Elvis's attempts at it haven't been preserved, at least not as far as anyone knows. But it was obvious that they didn't get anywhere with this ballad. Sam evidently asked Elvis to try other songs. Elvis probably threw in every song he knew, which were mostly, but what he sang for Sam that day was almost entirely ballads. It would be Dean Martin, songs by Dean Martin, songs by Billy Eckstein, songs by the Ink Spots, but nothing whatsoever resembling rock and roll. And I think at the end of the day, there was a feeling of great frustration on Elvis's part. I mean, just terrible disappointment. And on Sam's part, there remained the kernel of the idea that this kid is different. He has a different sound. There may be something. What is there? You know, there's something there that can be gotten. And out of that, Sam put him together with Scotty Moore and Bill Black, and said, "Why don't you guys try something with him and see what happens?"
Scotty Moore, the guitarist, and Bill Black, the bass player.
That's right. Yeah.
So the three of them come back into the studio, and they ended up instead of doing more ballads, they end up putting out a single that on one side has "Blue Moon of Kentucky," which was a Bill Monroe tune, something out of bluegrass, and on the other side had "That's All Right," a kind of rhythm and blues thing by Arthur Crudup. How did they end up with that selection, considering Elvis had been pegged as a ballad singer?
I think nobody was more surprised than Sam Phillips, Scotty Moore, or Bill Black. I mean, they came to this out of sheer desperation, I think, on Elvis's part. Elvis met Scotty. He went over to Scotty Moore's house on a Sunday. Sunday, July 4th, as far as I can determine. On Monday night, they went into the studio. They really just ran through a bunch of songs. They ran through the same kinds of songs that Elvis had done for Sam Phillips in the studio previously. On Monday night, they went into the studio, and you can hear some of the early attempts, like "Harbor Lights" or "I'll Love You I Love You Because," which were just pure ballads. Eventually, they were brought out years later by RCA. But it was evident by everyone's account that the session was completely falling apart. They were no more on the verge of success than Elvis had been in his initial tryout. And they took a break, and I think it was just in a moment of sheer desperation that Elvis, everybody's drinking Cokes, and all of a sudden Elvis just starts flailing away on the guitar and singing "That's All Right, Mama." When Elvis started playing "That's All Right," Scotty and Bill fell in and started playing along, and I'm sure it was very ragged, but Sam Phillips opened up the control room door, and he said, "What are you guys doing?" And they said, "I don't know." And Sam said, "Well, whatever it is, let's back up and do it again."
Well, let's hear Elvis doing "That's All Right."
"Well, that's all right, Mama. That's all right for you. That's all right, Mama. Just any way you do, that's all right. That's all right, Mama, anyway do. Well, Mama, she done told me, Papa done told me too. Son, that guy you foolin' with, she ain't no good to you. But that's all right, that's all right. That's all right, Mama, anyway do."
I guess you really have to give Sam Phillips credit for hearing what it was that made Elvis Elvis and not trying to fashion him into, somebody else's mold.
I think you have to give Sam Phillips enormous credit, not only for hearing, which is unique enough in itself, but for waiting.
Right,
For not imposing himself on Elvis or on Elvis's style. This is really at least a two-tiered story, and probably more, because I think that Scotty and Bill had a great deal to contribute as well. But the thing is that Elvis was a person of such broad musical intelligence. He was someone of so many different musical interests. Marion Kiesker described how, on the first acetate, he went through 12 different styles in the course of one song. And I think you can hear him straining on some of the ballads that came out from those sun years. You just hear all these different voices and all these different gropings, in a sense, towards his own style. It was with "That's All Right," and Blue Moon of Kentucky, and then rolling on from there, you can hear someone discovering his own voice instantly. It's almost as if it came to him instantly, and it was his voice. It was not the voice that Sam Phillips, there was no imposition in it. It was not Sam Phillips saying, hey, you should record a blues, but it was Sam Phillips waiting until that moment happened and then saying, that's it.
In your book, you really treat Sam Phillips with enormous respect.
Yeah, I think it's one of those remarkable accidents of history that a person of such unique talent as Elvis should be thrown in with a person of such equally unique gifts as Sam Phillips. I mean, you have really the meeting in Sam Phillips, you have someone who's as close to a genius as anyone I've ever met, and you have a person of just unswerving vision and dedication to the music.
Peter Guralnick from a 1994 interview with Terry Gross. His two-part biography of Elvis is called Last Train to Memphis.